10, the branches of the Chaitanya tree, text number 82. Prabhukai kunnagramer yehayakukur seymore priyanyan janeradur. The Lord said, what to speak of others? Even a dog in the village of Kulinagram is my dear friend. Kulinagram in Bhagya Kane Najaya Shukaracharaya Domase Krishnagaya. No one can describe the fortunate position of Kulinagram. It is so sublime that even sweepers who tend their hogs there also chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Anupam Balabasi Rupa Sanatan Etina Shakya Vikshet Pasime Sarvatan. Well, that, on the western side were the 43rd and 44th and 45th branches, Si Sanatan, Si Rupa and Anupam. They were the best of all. So, first of all, we are getting descriptions here of the residence of Kulinagram, which is within the holy Nam of Sridhar Mayapur. So it is said that there are even those who are fallen, even the souls who somehow or other by their previous karma did not get an elevated birth, that even they are very dear to the Lord. So, how important it is to realize that the residents of the holy Dhamma are never ordinary people. Just as we are chanting 10 offenses to, or not chanting, but as we are avoiding 10 offenses in the matter of chanting the holy name, in the same way there are 10 offenses listed in relation to the holy Dhamma. And one of these 10 offenses in relation to the holy Dhamma is to consider the residents of the Dham as ordinary persons. They're never ordinary persons. And in fact, it is said that Krishna is personally acting as their spiritual master. Somehow or other, they are dear to Krishna, and Krishna is personally making arrangements for their purification. Those arrangements may be sometimes soft, and other times may also be heavy. But the point is that it's not up to us to criticize the residents of the Dham. Srila Prabhupada, in that regard, was not recommending that we would intimately mix with these residents. He said that because in this age of Kali, the residents of the Dham are very difficult to understand. Because sometimes we see behavior that seems to not be up to the standards that we have been taught by Srila Prabhupada. And then in the mind one automatically begins to reject such people and say, these are not real devotees. But that we cannot say. Even if there is abominable activity, somehow or other they have developed so much attachment to Krishna that they took their birth in the holy Dham. Therefore, we always remain respectful, and we understand these souls are in a different category than we are. We are in the category of fallen souls who have somehow or other been uplifted by Srila Prabhupada. By his movement, somehow or other, we are here. And it is this movement that opened our darkened eyes, because otherwise we didn't know. And it is this movement that is sustaining us. And this movement is made of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And in that way, we're carrying on. There is no question that we would be able to maintain any spiritual life without the shelter of this movement. Even indirectly, even if we don't come so much to the temple, still at home we have so many paraphernalia, so many things that all came out of this movement. And even if we don't have any paraphernalia, we have our memories of of what this movement is. The very fact to know that it exists is giving us strength. To know that there are on this planet those who hold pure devotion in the highest esteem, that alone is something that can give one strength. That alone is something that is sort of in the back of our conscience, that sort of makes us feel that I've got to do more. I cannot just be an ordinary materialist, weak, falling prey to the pushings of the senses. I cannot just say, what can I do, when there are people who are actually serious about, in their surrender to pure devotional service to Krishna. It is sort of a wake-up call. So this movement is functioning like that. Just seeing a devotee is immediately acting in that way, like a wake-up call. So we understand that either consciously or unconsciously, we are very much supported by this movement. It is therefore that Srila Prabhupada was saying that, it was mentioned that those who are pious are naturally inclined towards devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned that he created our pious activities, that we didn't have any of our own. So in other words, we have no credit for being devotees, for whatever level of devotees we are. We cannot claim any personal credit for whatever we have attained. It is simply due to the mercy of the Vaishnavas, that we are where we are in relation to Krishna. That is important to remember. But these residents of the Holy Dham, they're different. They actually are very exalted souls who have done a lot of service in a previous life. Even if sometimes there apparently is some material desire in them, that may be, but their piety is very great. Krita Punya Punja, we cannot imagine how much piety they have accumulated for taking their birth in the Holy Dham. So in this way we are remembering the residents of Kulinagram. In this particular portion of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj, he is systematically taking us to understand Lord Chaitanya and his movement. He has first, Ado Guru Parasraya, he has first taken shelter of the spiritual masters. And his opening words in the Chaitanya Charitamrita are Vande Gurun, then Isa Bhaktan, then the devotees of the Lord. Isa Avatar, then he begins to worship the incarnations of the Lord. So, in the opening verse, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is worshipping first the spiritual masters, Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru, Chaitya Guru, the Guru within the heart. And then he begins to worship the Panchatattva. So after completing descriptions of Panchatattva, then we have come to the seventh chapter of the Adilila. In that seventh chapter, he begins to now not only describe Panchatattva, but now he begins to describe the work, the preaching work, and the distribution of the mercy that the Panchatattva is doing. Then, in the eighth chapter, he describes a little bit about the otter, how the otter received the mercy of the Lord, and how he is, in other words, qualified to write. So he describes about the adhikar, the authorization that the otter has to write. And then he begins in four chapters to describe the Chaitanya tree, the Chaitanya Kalpataru, or the this Chaitanya tree is very important. It is the tree that describes all the branches through which the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, different devotees. So it's glorifying all these devotees. Here we are seeing a description glorifying the residents of Kulinagram, Baninagvasu, as one of the leaders of them. This is very nice. To hear the description of these Vaishnavas, and by hearing about them, we're getting purified. And then verse after verse is describing various glorious Vaishnavas. So just by invoking their names, we get purified. But there is another reason why Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has been listing all these branches of the tree. Because by listing the tree, he is also putting a fence around the movement. He's also putting a fence around Lord Chaitanya's movement and saying, these are in and others are out. He's also, because there were so many who claimed to be followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but who were not actually following the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in this way, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has also established in these description of the, in four chapters of the branches of the Chaitanya tree, who is authorized. And of course, he has also stated that there were some that he hasn't mentioned. So there may be bona fide Vaishnavas who certainly are also accepted as bona fide branches of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are not mentioned here, but they're not prominent branches. If somebody claims prominence in the relationship with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he's not mentioned here, don't trust it. There is something wrong. So that is a very important aspect, because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is biography about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is considered to be the most authorized one of all the biographies. He is not only established, it is the most prominent one, let's say in that way. The other ones are also authorized, but in this Chaitanya Charitamrita, more than in any other of the biographies, which give all bona fide details about the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, here we find bona fide details about the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and also about his teachings and about the theology that was later developed by his disciples, the six Goswamis. So now we come to this verse which describes the six Goswamis, Sri Sanatan, Sri Rupa and Anupam. They were the best of all. Sri Anupam, this purport, Sri Anupam was the father of Srila Jiva Goswami and younger brother of Sri Sanatan Goswami and Sri Rupa Goswami. His former name was Vallabha, but after Lord Chaitanya met him, he gave him the name Anupam. Because of working in the Muslim government, these three brothers were given the title Malik. Our personal family is connected with the Maliks of Mahatma Gandhi Road in Calcutta, and we often used to visit their Radha Govinda temple. They belonged to the same family. Our family Gotra, or our original genealogical line, is the Gotam Gotra, or line of disciples of Gotama Muni, and our surname is Day. But due to their accepting the post of zamindars in the Muslim government, they received the title Malik. Similarly, Rupa, Sanatan and Vallabha were also given the title Malik. Malik means Lord, just as the English government gives rich and respectable persons the title Lord, as the Muslims give the title Malik to rich, respectable families that have intimate connections with the government. Thus, the title Malik is found not only among the Muslims, but also among the Hindu aristocracy. This title is not restricted to a particular family, but is given to different families and castes. The qualification for receiving it are wealth and respectability. It's a long, long quote. When I say long, long, I mean one, I'll tell you now, one, half, two, four, five and a half pages. It's difficult to read five and a half pages in one lecture. It's the system begins to get jammed, you know, information overload, you know how it is, it freezes, right? And then what do you do, right? So, I cannot deal with this purport on this morning. I can only deal with a portion of it, and the next reader can try and carry it further. But let us begin. Let us begin to glorify Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana Goswami. Anupam, their younger brother, he somehow or other left this planet at an early age. But his son, Jiva Goswami, of course, was very, very prominent. But all these three, especially Srila Sanatana Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami, they are the writers of the theology. Then we see that Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was from a South Indian Brahmin family and very learned, we see that Gopal Bhatta Goswami did a lot of research. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami worked very much with Sanatana Goswami on the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And sometimes they say that the Hari Bhakti Vilas was written by Sanatana Goswami, and others say that it was written by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, because both worked on it so much. Of course, since Sanatana Goswami was the senior Vaishnava, it is appropriate to say that it was written by Sanatana Goswami. But certainly a lot of work was done by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Nowadays, they would say they co-authored it, right? That would be the modern way of saying it. So, the six Goswamis made many contributions. One was they excavated holy places in the Holy Dham and established principal deities. And with that, gave us an opportunity to actually properly enter the Holy Dham. They gave us the opportunity to go to Vrindavan and there worship these deities, and through worshipping these deities, actually approach Krishna in a proper mood. We are still remembering the deities, Sisi Radha Madan Mahan, Sisi Radha Govinda, and Sisi Radha Gopinath. And we know that through Sisi Radha Madan Mohan, we are establishing sambandha. We are establishing the connection with Krishna. Through Sisi Radha Govinda, we are establishing abhideya, the process by which one makes spiritual advancement, and through the connection with Sisi Radha Gopinath, prayojana, the ultimate goal of spiritual life, the topmost goal. So these, the Goswamis in their teachings were also revealing these three aspects of spiritual life. So the first aspect, sambandha, is for most of us, it's quite a struggle to just make our connection solid. Because sambandha means that one accepts regulative principles. Sambandha means that one begins to chant a fixed number of rounds. Sambandha means, sorry, Australia, Pretoria and then came to Durban. So sambandha means that we fix ourselves in the process of devotional service. It means there is a whole devotional service is not all about sentiment. It's not just about coming and making some prayer and feeling very devotional while you put the bottle of milk. No, it is certainly nice to come and pray and make an offering to the deities. But there's a lot more. There's a whole process which governs our spiritual practice from morning to night. From the moment that we come to consciousness in the morning, it begins. Even before we open our eyes, already there is a duty. It is like that, immediately. And the first thing, when we do open our eyes, is to offer obeisances. Immediately. In the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it is said that one should then remember the names of one's worshipable deities, that one should offer prayers. Not that in the morning, as soon as you wake up, you start a whole conversation. Not in the morning that you quickly read the SMSs that might have come in overnight, or download mail before you brush your teeth. Start mundane jokes. One of the principles in spiritual life is that we avoid mundane sound vibration in the mornings as much as possible. I personally try, when I have the opportunity, to just have no mundane sound at all. Just no mundane sound for as long as possible. Delay it, postpone it, somehow or other. Don't let it enter. No mundane sound, only spiritual sound. This is exactly what Krishna did in the morning also. Krishna arranged that in the early morning there were only auspicious sounds. When Krishna was in Dwarka, there's a chapter in the Krishna book which is called Krishna's Daily Activities. And in these daily activities we see how in the early morning it was arranged that he would see only auspicious things, to remind, and hear only auspicious sounds. So this is our business, to avoid especially mundane sound in the morning. Very difficult, very difficult. There is just that little tendency to have that little conversation in between holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Nice weather today. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then, from nice weather, God knows where it winds up. I don't even want to know. That is the way that Gramya Kata, that mundane sound develops. Movements of the lips and the tongue at rapid speed. And many words a minute, right? And you can time it one time with a stopwatch, how many words a minute you can do. But it is amazing how many words a minute can come out of someone's mouth. And how meaningful are they? How meaningful? But if we can somehow or other, in the morning, establish only spiritual sound, hearing it and speaking it. How nice. So this is established in the scriptures, and it is Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatan Goswami who have established these principles for us, who have collected, who scrutinize it. Nanashastra vicharana ginipanosa dharma samstapako. They scrutinized all the Vedic literatures and then selected essential quotes that all help us to develop our our bhakti, our devotional service. So this is really essential that somehow or other we follow. So most of us are still working on the sambandha. It's gradually, you know, it's still not, we're not doing very well. We're still reluctant about really applying ourselves nicely. Sloppy rounds and so on, right? Rising a bit later than we know we should, or everything, just a little careless, a little careless. One devotee saw Srila Prabhupada putting tilak. It was the only time that this devotee ever saw Srila Prabhupada in person. Even at the initiation, it was only done through letter. But one time, this devotee met Srila Prabhupada, caught a glimpse from nearby, and saw how Srila Prabhupada in his room put tilak. And Prabhupada did that with so much care and attention, so much devotion, that this instance became an inspiration for life. It became an inspiration to pay real attention to important devotional things. To not just do them inattentively, but to attentively deal with all our devotional duties. That is sambandha. When we attentively deal with our devotional duties, that is sambandha. See, the Prabhupada also said, surrender means to follow all the rules and regulations. Not cut corners here, cut corners there, and then cut corners off the corners. And in the end, there are no corners left, if you know what I mean. The corners have become well-rounded. Yes. So, not like this. No. To be serious. So spiritual life, it means that we have to become serious. See, the Prabhupada pointed out that gravity is a quality of a Vaishnava, and an important quality. Of course, some people, when we hear the word gravity, start to yawn, you know. As soon as you say serious, grave, immediately, or spontaneously, the first yawn begins, and then as it gets more and more grave, then that yawn can develop into some sleeping sounds and so on. But gravity, seriousness, is required in spiritual life. Most people never grow up. That is a fact. I mean, we can see that children, they make a game out of everything. It's just like everything they do, they make it into a game. It's like they can't even get a bite of food from the plate to the mouth because in between there are so many games. It's just inconceivable. And the only way to really get it in is with a game, and put the prasadam on the spoon and say, and now the car is going in the garage. And the garage door opens. And then it goes inside. It's like, it's a whole thing. Everything is a game. And when we grow up, it's still the same. All the games people play. This game, that play, get the game. Everything is a game, you know. Like an African handshake, with all due respect. It's a whole game, right? It's a whole thing. God, you know. And I don't think Krishna did that when he shook the hand of Lord Brahma. It is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before Lord Brahma at the time when Lord Brahma was performing austerities for creative powers. And then Krishna gave a handshake to Lord Brahma. But I don't think he did all that, you know. Yeah? All those movements. But we play. We play in this world. We play with handshakes, we play with toys, lots of them. We play constantly. We play with the material energy, we play with our bodies, we play with each other, jokes, you know, from one joke to the next. And that's okay. Some people are walking out now. This is getting too serious, it's too much. Krishna is also known as making many jokes. That is a fact. So spiritual life is not dry. The Supreme Personality of God does have a sense of humor. But, and Srila Prabhupada also was humorous. But underneath it, there must be a foundation of gravity. And we must know when to joke and when to be serious. And there are times to be very serious. Right? Very serious. And at the core, we are very serious. Because otherwise, yes, we are serious about serious things. If we are not serious about serious things, then it's not going to work. Then gradually our spiritual life becomes weak, like a tire that hasn't been pumped up for a long time. If you neglect the pressure in your car tires, and you just say, we'll pump them up later, then one day you'll have a flat tire. In the same way in spiritual life, if we are not serious about serious things, then one day we will become compromised with the material energy. So it's all sambandha. And I'm talking simply about making a strong connection. The connection with the spiritual master, the other day in Pretoria, we were talking about the connection with the spiritual master. And, well, when you speak, you go from one thing into another. And it's like an adventure. When we are speaking about Krishna consciousness, it's like an adventure because you don't always know where you wind up. It's not that, the type of speech which is completely written out. I was sitting next to someone on a plane who had a speech that he was supposed to give, and it was completely written out. Completely. Well, my lecture this morning is not like that. It's not that I wrote it all out and then memorized it, or that I have a piece of paper sort of under the table. And when I'm looking down in humility, that I'm actually reading the note. It's not like that. No, it's one point leads into the next. So in Pretoria, we came to the point about the spiritual master and our relationship with the spiritual master, and in relation to this topic of sambandha, of making the connection. And how the relationship with our spiritual master is of a personal nature. Because the spiritual master, he is making and has made such a sacrifice for our benefit that he conquers us with that sacrifice. And then we can also make some sacrifice. By his sacrifice, he actually makes it possible for us to make some sacrifice, because otherwise we would feel, how can I make a sacrifice? So actually that is the crux of the relationship. In many cases we may feel, I never see my spiritual master. He's always on the other side of the planet. And now, he's even coming less than before. We may feel, but that's not the essence. The essence is not that when was the last time that he came to my house and had a cup of herbal tea and a kachori. That's not the essence. The essence is really that he's making a great sacrifice for our benefit. And that, if we just meditate on that for a moment, then immediately we can also feel, I must also do something. And that's how Prabhupada did it. All alone, being Jagat Guru, being the spiritual master of the entire world. How can one be the spiritual master of the entire world? I mean, isn't it Maharaj? We just start traveling now. Once have done that, we'll travel. Okay? And they say, so have done the will travel. Well, there you go. You land on the other side. Again, a little corner of the world covered. And as we're traveling, we realize it's too big. It's too much. There are too many people out there. It's too demanding. There is. That's what Maharaj told me this morning. He said, something like that. I forgot the words, but it boiled down to this point. Too demanding. Too much. I mean, it's like, quite demanding. It is like that. And Prabhupada was the spiritual master for the entire world, not just for a few people, but for the entire world. How did he do it? He couldn't speak to everyone in the whole world. He couldn't have a cup of tea in everyone's house, and if it would only stay a cup of tea. He couldn't. But he made a sacrifice. He made such a sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna, and everyone could see that. And then everyone felt also. And he made that sacrifice for us, for our benefit. Now we must do something to please him. Now we must make a little sacrifice to please him. This is the essence of the relationship with the spiritual master. Which is really, really nice, actually, if you think about that. And in that way, we can have an intimate relationship with our spiritual master if we appreciate the sacrifice he makes for us, and if we, in exchange, make some sacrifice for him. Only a small one, because what is our capacity? We are misers when it comes to surrender. It's like, yes, Krishna, yes. I'll do a little service for you, yes. Please accept my offering. It hurt, but anyway, I did it. I do it every Sunday. Very nice. No, just like those people from a certain Hindu society who told me with great pride that on every Purnima they change the cloth of the deities. They're very proud. Already for 32 years, every Purnima were changing the dress of the deities. And I was like, ooh. In ISKCON, that would be, you'd be ashamed of yourself, you know. and the spider webs. And first, every Purnima, the deity dressing schedule, you know, first it said, remove the spider webs. And then carefully remove the clothes of the deities. It couldn't be. How could we change only on a Purnima? At least in the temple, it couldn't be like that. And still we must appreciate that at least they do it every Purnima. So we appreciate the service. But still it's a little meager. So our service also is meager. But if we become fixed, fixed in a sacrifice, regulated sacrifice is better than incidental sacrifice. Sankhya purva ganama gana natibi. It is said we must regularly chant the holy name. So we must do it all the time, again and again. Take some responsibility. That devotee who distributes 100 books in one day, he is the most glorious. And that devotee who distributes his 5 books every day for 100 years is even more glorious. Steady devotional service is going to make the difference. Sambandha becomes mature. The connection becomes mature when we take responsibility. When it becomes regular and steady devotional service, then that connection becomes secure, mature, so it becomes Then, when the Sambandha is mature, then Abhideya, the purification, will really take place. Of course, purification takes place from day one. Purification is touching the lives of the people on the beachfront when the Rath Yatra is coming by, and an ocean of mercy is just flooding the beach, the beachfront, everywhere. It's just amazing how much advancement people make. But when it matures, then it becomes, then the responsibility element comes in. Many people never get there. They never get there. Their devotional service remains incidental. Then we never get beyond the initial stages. Then we remain kanista. And kanista means that the preoccupation is sambandha. The sambandha did not mature. The sambandha is not solid. It's not complete. It's still always weak. That is kanista, devotee with weak faith. Kamala shraddha. That is the neophyte devotee, the prakrita devotee. The devotee who ultimately, philosophically understands Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but who is still more absorbed in his own emotions, which are all preoccupied with material things. So yes, we know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Yes, we know so many things, but our emotions are all involved with material things. And we are totally absorbed in these emotions, in these feelings. Our thinking, feeling and willing, just preoccupied with matter. Then our Krishna consciousness is very weak. It's because our sambandha is not mature, because there's mundane sound in the morning and in the evening. It's because of that, because we are not putting a serious amount of effort to associate directly with Krishna in the form of transcendental sound. Then we are weak. Then we become weak. Naturally weak. We are associating with the mundane people. It is said that one must give up the association of mundane people. And the association of mundane people is also found in what they produce. Mundane association doesn't just mean that, you know, you shake the hand of a materialist. Oh no, I will never shake the hand of a materialist. I will not associate with mundane people. No, we also associate with mundane people when we are dealing with the products of their activities. Oh, yes, there are many products that are coming from mundane people that carry mundane energy. Many products. Carry mundane energy. Of course, if you're expert, you can somehow or other spiritualize it by engaging in the service of Krishna. But I've spoken many times about that there's an element of danger. And when I saw a car for you, Krishna, on the number plate for you, I wasn't criticizing, but I had the feeling to add something to that number plate, and namely a question mark at the very end. You know? Because I know myself that in my life how hard it is to say for you, Krishna. Kadamba Kamala Swami, for you, Krishna. Well, it means I have to beat my mind. It means I have to ignore my bodily identification. I have to say no, for all the squeaks that my body produces and that echo in my mind and that tell me, oh, you can't do this, too difficult. I have to be a hard taskmaster if I really want to say, for you, Krishna. It's not just cheap, not just easy, not just without surrender, not just without sacrifice, not just without willpower, not just without association, not just without endeavor, not just without good chanting, not just without hearing, not just without reading Prabhupada's books, not just without really living close to the temple, not just without going there regularly, not just without getting out of bed, and not just without a long list which could take the rest of the class. I could just stay now in this not just, I would never finish. We would still be here this evening. So, we have to become mature. For that gravity is required. We have to make arrangements. You cannot leave it by chance. I'm just waiting to become Krishna conscious. It didn't happen yet, but I'm hoping that it's going to happen one day, and then I will get more serious about my spiritual life. First get serious, and then you'll become Krishna conscious. What to do? What to do? And Krishna will force us. We have a plan with our life. And our plan may be to live a nice life in Krishna consciousness. To have a nice Krishna conscious, a nice inspiring Krishna conscious life. That may be our plan. That would be my plan. I'll tell you my plan. My plan would be to have a nice, inspiring Krishna conscious life where I do something useful for Srila Prabhupada, and then at the end I just go back to Godhead. That's my plan. It didn't always work out like that. And sometimes, at several times, it turned into hell. Several times I suddenly found myself in hell. And sometimes what seemed paradise or heaven before just transformed into hell, just like that. And then I was in hell, and somehow or other, I made it through it by the mercy of Prabhupada, Krishna, the Vaishnavas, the spiritual us, everyone. But it's like that. Hell is there also in spiritual life. So it's not necessarily going to be so beautiful. But when hell comes, hell or high water comes, then at that time, everything is taken away. When all material security, when everything, not only the material comfort, but all the material things that gave us spiritual support. You may have a whole big house with many wonderful paintings or pictures and so many other things that all are Krishna conscious. And when that's finished one day, when hell comes and all that's, and you don't have that anymore, then what? Then all you have left is what is inside, is the little bit of Krishna consciousness that is inside. That's all you have left then. And that's it. At a time when it gets tough, that's what we've got. Then we are tested. Then the real Krishna consciousness that we have, that's tested then. That's all we have. And we've got to do it somehow with that. At that time. This is how it is when life becomes hell. So, at the good times, it's not the time to enjoy the good times in KC, of course. But enjoy the good times within a Krishna conscious context.
Oh, yes.
No. When the good times are there, it is the time to stock up, to store as much Krishna consciousness as we can, to take real advantage in the good times, because we're going to need it. We're going to need it when hell comes. And hell will come, I'm sorry to say.
It's like I don't want to be a doomsday prophet. But you don't have to be a prophet to say that. Anybody knows it, right? Sooner or later, you know. Sometimes it just comes in a, well, in a relatively small way, sitting in a dentist chair. And sometimes it comes in a really heavy way, when your whole life goes upside down. It can come like that. And when your whole life goes upside down, then every little bit of investment in Krishna consciousness, it pays off. It pays off. It's like your insurance, you know. And if you have invested, then they pay out that insurance, and then you somehow or other can take it in a transcendental way. And if not, yes, then you may feel, if you haven't invested, then, and you were there as a regular member of the congregation and a regular member, but just you didn't invest enough, then at the time when life turns hell, then suddenly you're so weak, and then all your Krishna consciousness is just, it feels like you don't have any, and you just turn to mundane things for shelter. That's what will happen. So therefore, this gravity is important, that we must seriousness to invest now. Invest now. King Kula Shekhar, invest now while you're still young. Don't wait. Don't wait for later. Don't postpone. I'll do it later. Later I'll surrender. No. Now. Urgency is there because we don't know if we're going to have later. There's no guarantee that there will be a later. There's no guarantee. So this is when finally we can come to the Madhyama Adhikari platform. And the Madhyama Adhikari devotee, because he is serious, and because he is ready to surrender, and because he has firm faith, and therefore puts whatever Krishna says, he does it, and he doesn't invest in his material arrangements, but in his spiritual arrangement, therefore his focus becomes Abhideya. His focus becomes the process of purification. And such a devotee, he becomes deep. He becomes deep and not affected so much by what happens in this material world. Because the Madhyama Adhikari, he's in between the spiritual and the material world. I said the Kanista, emotionally still so involved with the material energy. Oh, it's so nice. Oh, it's so horrible. The material energy. Just material things. Oh, I feel that I have to do this. I feel that I must. I want. And so on. All just material emotions. What are they going to do for us? So much preoccupied with it. Madhyam, no more. Forget all that. I'm not going to bother with these things. You know, I'll use something as it comes. There are some material things you need anyway. And yeah, if it's a little nice, good. Yeah. But if it gets too nice, too comfy, too cushy, then immediately the madhyam, the beginning madhyam, slips again and goes back into the old habits that die on. It's so not material world. It's so good. And suddenly you're enjoying again. Enjoy again. And again. And again. How good life is. Yes. So, Madhyama Adhikaris, we must be mature, We must build up a regular practice. We must take responsibility in service. Then read the books and be devotees.
How much do we need? How much do we have to hear? How many arguments do we need?
Do we need 10 million arguments before we finally say, all right, I'll get serious about spiritual life?
We've heard already so many, and still we're saying, I'm not yet completely convinced. I'm not yet completely sure that this is what I really want to do. I'm still struggling. How many arguments do we need?
A few should be enough. We are eternal spirit soul. We're not this body. We're eternal servant of Krishna.
Then, what more do we need? That alone should be enough. All right, we'll give you a few more.
There's a material world and a spiritual world. Spiritual world's a lot nicer. Okay, that's a good point. All right.
Some more arguments, more and more. And we get so many arguments, and still, in spite of all the good arguments, I think most of us, if you would do an exercise, a little seminar, and I would, in the seminar, I would become a school teacher, and you would be my students, and I would punish you all, and I'd say, now you have to, as punishment, write down 100 arguments, right? Why Krishna consciousness is better. Right? 100 arguments you have to write down. And just like a punishment, you know, you have to write 100 lines, right? I will never again, whatever. I was good at it, multi-pen writing, and so on. But my point is, and he who has finished his 100 arguments can go, oh, I'm sure he could do it very fast. 100 arguments why Krishna consciousness is better. We can do it. That means we have heard probably 1,000. If we can write down 100, maybe we've heard 1,000.
And still we didn't take it to heart.
How much do we want? How much do we take? Well, give me one more life of arguments, please, why I should become serious. Like this. I'm not saying this to you, sitting on the raised seat, that I'm the one who's doing all this and why you people don't get it together. This is not my lecture. My lecture is to myself. I'm including myself in getting serious. But why are we like that? Why? Because we are fools. It's like there's no other end. We are fools. What does it mean that we are fools?
It means that we have no brain. No brain. Doing, doing, doing. Nothing in there.
Or, that's one option.
Or the other option, it means that we are mad.
Yeah. The other day, I visited a devotee who somehow or other lost it, you know, something cracked, and they had to take him to the funny farm. And what to do? And I visited him there. And then, as I was there, I had a bit of a chat with one of the doctors, right? And then, you know, we were just talking about different things, and then the topic came up that actually, within such a place, you will find a remarkable high IQ amongst the residents. Right? It said mostly the IQ of people in insane asylums is higher than the general populace. That was very interesting.
I thought that was an interesting point to hear. Right?
So maybe we do have a brain. Right? Maybe we do have a brain,
but maybe we're just mad.
Because otherwise, why would we not be serious? Prabhupada's favorite cartoon, the man who's saying, the wife who's saying to the husband, chant, 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 and the man who's saying, can't, can't, can't. Prabhupada's favorite cartoon. He had it cut out, it was from a newspaper, he had it cut out and he had it copied and he had it sent all over to devotees. If any cartoon is Prabhupada's favorite cartoon, it's just that one. Chant, 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 can't, can't, can't. And we can put it on our t-shirt. We can walk around with it and make it our motto. We can say, this is me, this is it. We can look in the mirror again and again with that t-shirt on. Chant, chant, can't, can't. Yes, this is the situation. So, Madhyam is seeing an urgency. And he's in between the material world and the spiritual world. The Uttam is living in the spiritual world. He's always thinking about the spiritual world. He's always thinking of Krishna and his relationship with Krishna. He's always thinking about Krishna. And not just, yeah, I'm thinking of Krishna. No, he's thinking of Krishna in great eagerness. He's always thinking of Krishna like that. That is Uttam, topmost devotee. So such devotees, they are living in the spiritual world, but they are here. They can be walking around in this material world, showering us with mercy. And such devotees are the six Goswamis. And such devotees, from that platform, they wrote these books. And these books, therefore, are like a clear-cut path, like a path through an intense, dense jungle. If you have to go through an intense, dense jungle, even if you have your machete and you're cutting down left and right, if you don't have a compass, you'll get lost. If you don't have a compass, maybe one day you'll come back to a spot and say, oh, this looks familiar. God, looks just like the place where we were 1 month ago. And then you see the stones are still there from the fireplace that you made. And you realize, we walked in a circle. So, in spiritual life, how many times are we walking in circles? But the clear carved out path by the Goswamis, that is the path. Prabhupada said, life is like hardwood and you have to carve Krishna out of it. So don't think it's cheap, don't think it's going to be easy, but let's not waste it. Let's take it, this life, and therefore we must more spiritual sound. More spiritual influence. Just increase it in different ways in our life. More things. And we see the associates of Mahaprabhu who during Prasadam were chanting in between bites. They didn't want to waste a second. Not a moment. Avyakta Galatra. That is Uttama. Didn't want to waste a second. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Nityananda is chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna in a deep voice while his eyes are rolling in his face. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Intoxicated. Krishna, Krishna. Many cowherd boys hovering around his feet, with lotus feet like bees, also chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna in a deep voice. Krishna. And have you already finished our rounds? Well, almost. And then we can leave our beat bag in our room or at home. Like this. Six Goswamis. So fixed so eager to serve Krishna.
That's what they brought us.
That's what they brought us. And they said, just chant all the time. And we say, yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. That's a good point. Just chant all the time. Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point. Yes. Very good. Yeah, we also did. That was a very good lecture. Yeah. Strong lecture. Yeah. Very strong. 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 Where did the sannyasis get? Any question? Any comment? Any life question?
Yes.
Basically, you know, the question is that about seriousness, and that some devotees just really seem to have it, yeah? And that is just by nature they are just serious. And then he said, "And I just don't have it." You know? And it seems that like the amount of spiritual advancement you can make is just sort of cut out for you, and that there's like nothing much you can do about it. But then you are saying that your spiritual progress is limited by your karma. You know, that's philosophically what it means. That would not be possible. So it is possible, no matter where we come from, that we can also become serious. Anyone can become, but how to do it? I was just a few days ago, I was reading a book from Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and it was nice. And one thing he said was, he stressed the point that one should make friends with devotees, and that you'd better make sure that you make friends with people who are more advanced than yourself. And that's the answer. That's the answer to your question. Make friends with people who are more advanced than yourself. Whenever you see a person who's more advanced than yourself, try and make friends. You know, the dati, prati, grinati, all that. Try and make friends, you know. You know, I also, as a sannyasi, you know, like, you see that you deal with many people. And many people, they are afraid of you. And many people are afraid of sannyasis. And it's like, they're scared of getting close, they're scared of talking to them, they're scared of, they're all right at a distance, but like, yeah. But some people are bold, and they just walk into the room of all the advanced Vaishnavas. They just come to the door. Right? I'm not inviting you to all come to the door. But some people are like that. And they get the mercy. The duck who quacks the loudest. Prabhupada told the story. There was a whole nest full of little ducklets, and the mother was trying to feed all these hungry mouths at the same time. And the one that quacked the loudest got the most. So we have to be like that. So we have to be eager to make friends with those who are more advanced than we are. And then it will come, the seriousness. It comes from association. So maybe we lack close association, good association. But it's just because we don't go after it.
Maharaj, you mentioned about the residents of the holy Dhamma being special as having Krishna as their spiritual master. So at our temples in Mayapur and Vrindavan, etc., are we not meant to preach in terms of book distribution, etc.?
No, we also distribute books in the holy Dhammas and to many of the pilgrims that come, and even some of the residents. But it's not our main mission that we have to make the residents of the Dham Krishna conscious. It's not our first worry. Right? Our first worry is to make the whole world Krishna conscious. It may be that in the Dham we want to set a very high standard of pure devotional service. Because there are also, not everyone in the Dham is a great exalted devotees. There are also rascals, Kali Chelas, disciples of Chali, of Kali in the Dham. But if we start thinking who is who and get too much into that, we may make offenses. And you might even see someone who is misbehaving a lot may still on the other side have a lot of credit with Krishna. So therefore we're careful in dealing with the residents of the Dham. And therefore, Prabhupada said, better keep a respectful distance. That's all. Our main preaching mission in the Dham is to have a very high devotional example. Right? That is, like for many years, when I was temple president of Vrindavan, I was thinking, well, what are we supposed to do here? And the best thing we can do is to not cover the Dham. When we are, if we are devotees in the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, our main service is to be transparent to the Dham, is to have the same standard of pure devotional service as the eternal residents of the Dham. That would be the best service we could do. Because people from all over the world will come anyway. They'll come. And if the devotees in the temple can have the same standards as the residents of the Dham, that would be the best service we could do. And then from the we do book distribution, yes. But here, it's even more important that we do book distribution. Here, we must really do it. You mentioned that Srila Prabhupada said how he created our pious activities and how pious people are inclined to devotional service. I've also heard Madhurya Kadambini that only bhakti can give bhakti, and that bhakti can arise, I guess not is missing, cannot arise from anything material. How to reconcile this? The Chaitanya Charitamrita solves the question. Because the question, in Bhagavatam, Yesam Tanta Katha Papam Jananam Punya Karanam Te Dundaniya Moham Ta Bhajantamam Dridavrata. So it is said that those who are pious, Punya is said, they worship me with great determination. So the Bhagavad Gita verse seems to indicate that piety can lead to bhakti. On the other hand, Bhagavad Gita says that you can bhakti-mam abhijanati yavanyas-chaspitatvataha, that you can only know Krishna through bhakti. Right? So an apparent contradiction comes up in the Bhagavad Gita in looking at these two verses. Obviously, the verse where Krishna says that only through bhakti one can attain bhakti supersedes any other consideration. So one gets bhakti only through bhakti. Then what has piety to do with it? Well, there are different kinds of piety. Chaitanya Charitamrita clarifies that. There is karma unmukhi sukriti, moksha unmukhi sukriti, and bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Karma mukhi sukriti is the kind of piety that gives you a good material situation, good education,
good birth in a good family, nice bodily features, plenty of material facilities, and so on. That is kamamukti fertility, kamamukti sukriti. From that path, if one is taking his birth in a good family, it helps. If one takes his birth in a socially dysfunctional family, many people themselves become socially dysfunctional. If we look at a man who is beating his wife, in many cases his father was also beating his wife. In many cases it carries forward from one generation to the next. Check out the father. Yes. So, like that. In many cases, the traumas or mental problems carry forward from one generation to the next. So piety helps. But this is only karma mukti. Then mokshan mukti. Mokshan mukti karma or sukriti is that type of activity which detaches us from the material world and helps us to become free from this material world. It is the kind of, it's the result of renunciation, it is the result of austerity, and such kind of, it is the result of giving in charity. You just give up the things that are dear to you, you gave it away, something. So you get some moksha mukti sukriti there from there, you become liberated. I'm talking about give it away to a material person. Now, bhakti on mukhi sukriti is when you do something in devotional service. And that kind of piety that arises from doing anything in devotional service, that is the real piety which will tip the balance. The other type of sukriti, karma mukhi and moksha on mukhi, are supportive. It helps. It's easier to join Krishna consciousness from a supportive background than from a total materially problematic area. But it doesn't matter, whatever our background is, anybody can join. You can join this movement from the mode of ignorance, from having a joint in one hand and having a glass of whiskey in the other, while sitting in the house of a prostitute, right? You can suddenly get the awareness that, what am I doing with my life? I'm just going to hell. And suddenly it can strike you, and you can just turn around, and you can just say, enough. I've got enough of this, and just become the most surrendered devotee. It's possible. It's possible. But there will be some struggle on the way. It's not just automatically. Because the material piety is not there, sometimes the material impiety will emerge. Like at the edge of our consciousness, if I may compare the consciousness to a sea with, you know, like a disc like that, and then the horizon, the dragons stick their head above the horizon. Our old sinful thoughts come back. So that will be there. So piety can be helpful. But bhakti, only pious activities performed in devotional service can actually give us bhakti. But the other ones can be supportive. That is the symbol. The line coming from Rupa Sanatan Goswami is so prominent, yet they appear in the 40s in terms of brothers. Maybe. Described. Does the numbering mean anything in terms of the branches? Okay. Yes, the numbers is not in terms of who's the most important. No, the numbers are actually related to who came first. Yeah. So So the numbers have something to do with those who were elder. Rupa and Sanatana were not the first ones to join. They were not the first disciples. They were not the first one who met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They met him later. There were many devotees. When Sanatana Goswami came to Jagannath Puri, many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were already there. And Sanatana Goswami offered his obeisances to all of them, and he got blessings from them. Although at that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was already highly respecting Sanatana Goswami still, because he was junior, he offered obeisances and he got blessings. So, I don't think that Krishnadas Kavirets though wrote the numbers entirely on the level of seniority either, and that you can say 100% about who joined first. He said, well, wait a minute, this one joined 3 days later, so he's one number later. It's not that rigid either. Right? It's not that rigid either. But you can see there is an element of following the sequence in which people became involved in mentioning these branches. But sometimes, as a writer, he may have simply mentioned some branches as they came to his mind. Krishnadas Kavirets is terribly organized as a writer. It's a super organized book. Very organized book. But still, you know, how organized can you be? And so, as you're writing, you know, it's like sometimes you just write things down as they come to your mind. And that's all right. That's all right. So I don't think that we should look for some sort of hierarchy in the numbers. Top of the Pops and Rupa and Sanatana are number 40 in the Top of the Pops. Nothing like that. Please explain the term Guru is one. Well, there are different explanations. Mayavadis would give one explanation, and they might oftentimes quote it. So when you hear this kind of a statement, in many cases, red alarms can start flashing on your dashboard, and you can immediately realize that, does this smell like Mayavad philosophy? As soon as you hear is one, right, is one, it's like red lights flashing, what's going on. But Vaishnavas do say Guru is one, Guru Tattva is one. If you say Guru is one, I would prefer the Vaishnava, the better way of saying it for Vaishnava would be say Guru Tattva is one. Right? Which can be based on the principle of, on the Sanskrit term as Akanda Guru Tattva. Akanda Guru Tattva means Akanda without end, that which never ends, because there is one truth, and the Guru is the embodiment of the truth and the teacher of the truth, and therefore Guru is one, that he embodies the same truth. It's not that one Guru is one truth and another one is another truth. Although sometimes, you know, on a detail, things are different. Like I was sitting in this initiation sacrifice, and so many gurus are giving initiations, and everyone, many disciples were coming forward, and they're asking, what are the four regulated principles? Meat, yes, and what else? That which swims in the water, yes, yes, yes. All these things, and how many rounds? 60 minimum, yes, yes. And then suddenly, and then Lokanath Maharaj with one disciple, right? With one disciple said, how many rounds? 60, and how many on Ekadasi? And the disciple felt it coming. Said, like, he's going to ask me to promise to chant 25 rounds on Ekadasi now. And he didn't ask anybody else. And nobody else asked any of the other disciples, right, to chant 25 rounds on Ekadasi. And then with this one disciple, he just goes like, and how many rounds on Ekadasi? It was at the Mataji. And she goes, and she was hesitating.
25? And then he says, yes,
that's right, 25 in the currency.
And there she had promised it, you know. It's one thing to try and chant 25 rounds in the currency, it's another thing to promise it. And she promised it, and her god brothers and god sisters didn't promise it. That was pretty far out. That was a far out moment. I remember that one. Although Guru is one, it seems that sometimes in some details there are some differences.
But we don't care about that. The essence is one. We are eternal servants of Krishna. Yeah. So the truth is one. And with that, we are 15 minutes over a civilized time. So thank you very much for spending all that time with my attempt to produce some transcendental sound in the hope that it will make some contribution, even although imperfectly composed, even although coming from a pure, impure source, it is said. Nectar can even be taken from poison. So I have a hope that maybe this long, strong lecture can be of some use. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Kirtan.